Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Episode 333 of Top Rope Nation. Ryan Droste, Justin Joint, Jesse Velasquez. Boys, we were able to watch this one together. We laughed. We cried. We saw the end of one of the greatest careers in the history of professional wrestling last night with Sting at AEW Revolution. We're here to talk all about it. Justin Joint, how are you doing 24 hours later?
Goddamn, I love professional wrestling. That was one hell of a show. I've been walking on cloud nine ever since last night. Just in that show just carried me into Monday with a good mood and a smile on my face. And I can't think of a wrestling show that has done that in years. So excited to talk about this with you boys.
Absolutely. Jesse, you were down here in Iowa. You watched the show. We're all here at my house last night. You're back up in the Twin Cities now. Had a safe drive back, luckily. How are you doing tonight?
A little fatigued, I think, is just because of the circumstances of the last 48 hours. Is not my norm, staying up till 1 in the morning, drinking a little bit more than I'm used to. So starting to feel those effects of it. But I'm going to echo the same sentiments as Justin Joint. Wow. I think is the only word I can use to describe last night's show. But once we get into grades and stuff, I can elaborate further. Yeah, that was incredible.
I mean, what can we say other than when you come down to Iowa, it's like hitting the road in the 80s in the pro wrestling industry, man. It's going to take you a couple days to recover. We got to the Flying Elbow. That was a great time. All hung out, hit the local brewery on Sunday, then watched the show together. Great to see you as always. We'll be doing this again real soon. I can't think of a bunch of guys that I would have rather taken in this show with. You know, Justin Joint, a little stinger from way back, just like myself. Jesse, have become a good friend, and you know, you're so knowledgeable about the history of wrestling too. And I think just as people who appreciate the history of wrestling, I don't know that we've ever seen a better send-off to a wrestler in this industry ever. I mean, I think WWE gave Ric Flair a great one, and then he shit all over that when he needed some money. So I can't go to Ric Flair. I mean, that would have been up there, but that was ruined. And, you know, there's probably some examples that aren't coming to the top of my mind right now. But as far as modern wrestling goes, or in like the last couple of decades, they did it perfectly. I think that the love for Tony Khan has for Sting came across, you know, in the post show and certainly at the scrum when they were up there together, and he wanted to do right by this guy. And thankfully, because, you know, when they actually got Sting in WWE, we've talked about it many times on the show over the years, that run was not at all what we wanted. And he deserved much better. We didn't think we'd ever see this guy in the ring again. He comes into AEW 3 years ago. And, you know, that first thing, it was like a cinematic match. So we're like, okay, he'd probably do something like that. It protects him a little bit, however they go about shooting this match. And then before long, this guy's jumping off ladders and balconies and just crazy for a man in his mid-60s. And luckily, no serious injuries in his farewell. My God. Justin, your thoughts?
To echo what you said, I've been thinking about that all day, too, as to who could claim a better send-off. It did bring a smile to my face thinking about maybe the Undertaker watching what AEW has done with Sting these past 3 years and the send off that he got, and hopefully a few tears, you know, went down his cheek thinking about what could have been for old Taker. I guess he can claim the graveyard match, but holy shit, does that pair in comparison to what we watched last night? Bittersweet. I mean, it was fantastic. Stupid me. Thank God I don't have the pencil and I'm writing the book, because in the preview show, I said the Young Bucks should win. And not even halfway into that match is like, Sting has to win this, you know?
Yeah, I
think we all agreed on that. I don't know what you can say. I mean, kudos to everybody involved. They did something that I will never forget about. I mean, that's a match I will never forget, you know? I said bittersweet because that Sting was kind of my last connection to my youth, you know, watching wrestling. You know, there's really nobody left. He was the last one that, you know, I kind of felt like a kid again watching that match last night. Especially Darby, who almost had me like watching through my fingers, just scared to death of what that guy was going to do. And holy crap, did he deliver? So yeah, I'm at a little bit of a loss of words about what we witnessed last night.
Is it weird to say, and like Tony hinted at this too, that he was trying to get him to stay on through All In? I'm sure he would have liked it, you know, just for the ticket sales aspect, but just another marquee show at Wembley Stadium with Sting on it again. Is it weird to say that a guy who's going to be turning 65 here in a couple of weeks feels like he has more left in the tank? I mean, it's just like,
he looked like he could keep going last night after the match. He was still a ball of energy, which I'm sure that was probably adrenaline that he's never really felt before, considering it was his last match.
Yeah. Jesse, your take right off the top here.
This is a guy who's been eligible for ARP for a decade, and he's moving around like a guy probably 5 years younger than that. It's the whole opening sequence as soon as Darby hit the ring and they go to Sting in the movie theater and rolling through his beginning days. They even showed him with the Dingo Warrior, I believe, in the UWF. And obviously they couldn't really touch on much of the the WCW stuff because of the licensing. Yet you got to see the stuff with Muda. You got a couple of things in WCW, the New Japan stuff. I think they got to show his match with Ric Flair at the very end for a brief moment. Mm-hmm. And then they got to just go through the AEW stuff and what he's done over the last 3.5 years. And I actually remember being a little bit critical of him the first year and some change. I was one of those that was just like, why are we kind of following a WWE's footsteps and having a legend pin younger talent? Mm-hmm. And I'm now realizing that I think that this was all the right decision. And I think Tony did this just because exactly what Justin said. It's what the WWE did to him with the WrestleMania 31 stuff, the Seth Rollins match. It just wasn't the proper way to treat a legend. And he went out with an absolute bang last night. Got to see his sons as well cosplay a couple of his characters. I know one's a little bit controversial, which we'll get into a little bit here in a moment. But all of it was just amazing, and I don't think you could have put together better opponents in All Elite Wrestling than Matthew and Nicholas Jackson because of the antagonists that they play. Mm-hmm. And they did a tremendous job last night as well, on top of what Darby and Sting did.
You know, and it was great because I was a little concerned, because a lot of times when you have, you know, when you've built a personal hot feud, that these matches will start off slow. But this, like, I mean, before the bell even rang, Darby was flying through the ropes, you know, hitting both of them. And it was just intense and go, go, go from the start. And, you know, the interesting thing about me thinking that the Young Bucks should go over and being very wrong about that is that not only did they not go over, but just like through this entire run, you know, they booked Sting like a monster. You know, he kicked out at one of the EVP trigger. He no-sold the double super kicks. I mean, they just made him look like a Superman. And I guarantee that was not Sting's choice. I guarantee that was Tony saying, nope, this is the way you're going out. You know, which I maybe would feel a little bit different about it if maybe it was like a one-on-one match. But Darby's been getting the rub from Sting these past 3 years. And so you do actually have somebody coming out of this Sting rung looking all that much better for it.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I think great points. I think Sting's a super generous guy. I mean, as far as legends go, one of the most giving. I think we've heard all these stories coming out, you know, what it's been like working with him over the last few years. I think if it was up to him, he would have lost. And he kind of hinted at that in the post-show scrum. You know, like Tony was very insistent on how this was going to go. He did handpick the Bucks that Sting wanted the Bucks to be who he wrestled in this match. And great choice there. It made him look great. But yeah, I mean, I think just the best way to go out, I was not on the preview show, but I told you guys before the show, I agree with Jesse that I thought they would probably put him over. And then, you know, I think this is going to add to, you know, their television in the next couple of weeks with having this tournament, and the March Madness tie in too with TNT and TBS is also great. I think this is going to be really interesting now, you know, to really rejuvenate the tag division, which we've talked a lot about on the show. And Jesse, you've been adamant about this too, that it's been weak. And this is something that had been such a strength for the promotion. I'm really looking forward to the tournament to strengthen that again. But I think when it comes down to it, you got one of the biggest arenas in the United States sold out to see this guy off, and you had to do it in the main event. There's just no way you couldn't put him over. If he loses there, you would have had to do something afterwards to get him, you know, to stand tall at the end. But I think that would have been difficult. I think it would have been deflating had he lost. So I think it was the right call overall, despite Mr. Steve Borden probably not being a fan of winning. but I think just, yeah, top to bottom, they just put it together so well. The movie theater thing that you guys were talking about. You know, thank God with their working relationship with New Japan, so we actually got some Surfer Sting footage in there, along with the pictures from Pro Wrestling Illustrated, you know, from the WCW days, but the New Japan footage. And, you know, I thought they put that together really, really well. And then we were all talking about what they would do versus theme song, because I told you, I'm not a huge fan of his AEW theme. It's pretty generic. And I had said, I wonder if they got that original WCW theme that Justin likes so much, you know, from the early 90s. And then we started talking about that and we were like, I don't know, maybe WWE owns that, because I think it was in one of the WWE video games at one point in time. So getting Metallica for Search and Destroy was perfect. I mean, when his son walked out, his first son in the Surfer Sting gear at first, because he looked so much like him, I think the crowd thought it was him. Yeah. And I did too for a split second before I could tell he was a little stockier. And Sting said in the post-show scrum, that's the exact reaction, you know, that he wanted, that it could be him. And then, you know, Wolfpack Sting, I know Justin's a little critical of that. I do think, though, like the greater wrestling community at large, I think there's some fandom for Wolfpack Sting. I'm not saying I'm one of them, but I think since he's doing Black and White Sting right now, I think for the contrast, you pretty much had to do that. Joker Sting is like pretty similar to what he's doing now. The all red face paint is a good contrast, I think, to it. So I like that. The match itself, I mean, Jesus, he took that table bump up by the ramp with very little cushioning underneath. We were a little concerned at that point. Of course, Darby going through the glass. I mean, what can you say? This guy's nuts, going through that glass on the outside. Then Sting goes through the glass in the ring. Thank God nobody in the crowd got hurt from what we know. But yeah, I mean, it was a spectacle. There are other matches on the show, as we're going to talk about, that you get into like the star ratings are probably, well, for sure, the better matches. But this is the one, at the end of the day, though, it's going to stick with you. So if you factor that into your star ratings, I don't know how maybe this isn't your match of the night. I mean, it's, boy, I love the Ospreay match, but I think 5-10 years from now, this is the one I'll remember from the show. So if you're giving the main event your match of the night, I can't disagree. Let me ask you guys your match of the night and your grade for the show, Justin.
Real quick, I just want to go back to Wolfpack Sting real quick. I think part of the reason it surprises me is because Sting has basically admitted that was like one of the darkest periods of his life. That was like a real low point. I think both professionally and personally. So that was kind of a surprise. I get what you're saying about the contrast. That makes sense. I think I just would have preferred, like, if both boys would have came out, like, you gotta, if that was the plan, you got to do the red, white, and blue sting. That is absolutely iconic. Loved it. I think the other one they should have done, which it would have been harder to recognize, would be for the other son to come out as Sting from Clash One, which was in that arena, correct?
Yeah.
The one that kind of made Sting. But having said that, great for the show, easy A. And that is an A that leans closer to the plus than it does the negative. And that is not to say that this was a perfect show. It was not. Hello, scrambled eggs match. For match of the night, I, you know, at least as of last night, I know what your guys's was. And I loved Ospreay and Takeshita. Loved it. And to point to how good the show was, that was my third match of the night. My number one afterthought, you know, when I left your house, Ryan, my match of the night was Danielson and Kingston. I freaking love that, you know. But, you know, by the time I got home, it was like Sting and Darby versus the Young Bucks was perfect. It was exactly what it needed to be, especially when you considered Sting's age and ability. That's the one I'm never going to forget about. And, yeah, five stars for me. That's you know, and that's the other thing, talking about the show as a whole, and this is something we've talked about before when it comes to AEW shows, is you think about all of the matches we saw that we loved, we got a variety again. You know, the main event was basically a hardcore match. The Ospreay and Takeshita was a hard-hitting, athletic, New Japan-style match. And then you talk about Kingston and Danielson was this, you know, the third in the trilogy, a technical masterpiece in my mind, working the limbs, just all about the story. And I love that, you know, diversity that you get on an AEW card.
Yeah. I mean, those three are definitely, I think, the top three of the night. Okay, Jesse, your match of the night, you're great.
Where do we go? So, don't really talk about this much, but using pro wrestling as an escape from reality. And this show last night did so many things on so many levels. And Justin Joint himself said he fucking loves pro wrestling. And this is exactly why. We have times in our lives where we struggle. And what's been all reliable for us since our childhood, it's been pro wrestling. When you get something like this, how can anyone not find something on this show that they loved? There was, like Justin said, a buffet. I had that written in my notes. I said there are four matches I could easily go back and watch right now with the replay value. The only one you guys didn't mention was FTR and Claudio Moxley for me. I think on that fringe, you have the triple threat. You have Orange Cassidy and Roderick Strong.
Yes, also. I'd put that in like a top five. I loved that match.
Yeah, I would definitely put those two kind of on a fringe. You have to go back and rewatch. But Danielson Eddie was, from a storytelling perspective, I think was the best of the night there. You had Darby Sting. That's going to be the moment everyone's going to remember. And then for me, we'll get into it later on Ospreay and Takeshita. Like, looking at that crowd last night and how they reacted to that match before the Bucks and Darby and Sting, they were just in total awe. They could not believe what they were seeing. And I've been following Ospreay since late 2017, early 2018. I know what he's about. I've been really following Takeshita over the last year. I know what he's about. So America just got to see, I think, a new wave of professional wrestling that is extremely exciting. And it's something that you really can't put on display every week just for the fear of the shine wearing off of it, I suppose. But
yeah,
easy A for me, just for all the reasons that I listed.
I also didn't ask you, are you guys having anything in the glass tonight?
I am. because of how much joy that show gave me. I cracked open my second to last Ghost in the Machine to celebrate the stinger.
New Parish Brewing IPA.
Now I only have one left.
Jesse, did you do it? Did you make it three nights in a row? Yeah, hole off tonight.
I looked for that ghost in the machine. By the way, I went to Happy's, folks.
The famous liquor store, yes.
I most certainly did. Last night I had a hit the double that was on brand from the TRN Classics from Tuesday night. Tremendous double IPA. I can't remember where it was from. No, I am not drinking, unfortunately. I'll probably be having one next Monday night, and then I'll be back on my regularly scheduled programming from a drinking perspective the week of the 21st.
All right. Well, I got a gin and tonic. I took the gin that I was telling Justin about last night, The Botanist, sister.
I got to try that.
Pick this up for me. Good gin. Good stuff. So that's what I got tonight. But yeah, okay. So my grade, I would go A for sure. And just like Justin, closer to A plus than A minus. I think it's an all-timer of a pay-per-view. Mm-hmm. Multiple matches that could be in the match of the year consideration, all-time classics, an all-time moment. I don't know how you don't have this at an A. In fact, it might be the greatest AEW pay-per-view of all time. I was looking at the ratings right now on Cage Match just to see the aggregate, you know, and all of their events. And still the celebration for Brody Lee is still number one. I don't think that will ever change. But then you get into All Out 21, which we were at. And then it's Revolution 2024 right now in the voting. And they're within like shouting distance, like 0.13 apart. Revolution 23 is then down the list. Then All Out 23, then Forbidden Door. So a bunch of shows we were at. And, you know, while I love to call out the fact that I was at All Out 21 and it was a great night and I had so much fun that weekend, I got to put this show over it. I've been thinking about this all day. I think this was a better pay-per-view. That one had the moments, but you know, when you go, because of the surprising debuts and stuff, when you go match to match, I don't think this has been topped. I think this is the, I think this is the best one. I think it's the best show the company's ever put on pay-per-view. Tony was adamant about that in the scrum. He always says stuff like that, but I think in this case, it's absolutely true. You know, we put up the Twitter poll as we always do. I'll share that. You're always going to have your trolls, but we had 267 votes since last night, and like about 66% gave it an A, and then like 21% a B. Anything else is just trolling. I mean, if you think this was a C or a D F show, you should probably turn in your wrestling fan card at this point. So, I mean, I don't know how you can give anything but an A, to be honest. If you're hypercritical, you could say A minus. But, dude, it doesn't get much better than last night.
Who would find that pay-per-view average?
I know. C is average. I mean, I don't know how you could possibly. It's just trolls that, you know, they don't like wrestling. They stand for corporations. That's the only explanation.
Yeah. I had to think about this too last night with the moments from All Out 21, the moment of Sting's retirement and the way that he went out. Mm-hmm. Trump's an Adam Cole and a Bryan Danielson debut any day of the week.
Ooh.
I'm sorry. It does. And I'm kind of critical of Steve Borden. And still, this guy's been around for 35 plus years. Mm-hmm. They gave him a great send off. I get Danielson, especially that debut and how huge that was. You guys were there for that. But then you go through, and I think you guys talked about it last night with me with Full Gear 21, which I said was the best in-ring card. Yeah, this one is better. Because there was three top end matches at Full Gear 21. This one had, like I said, anywhere from 4 to 5. And you could even throw, I like the triple threat match more than other people did too.
I think like Revolution 22 also top to bottom was a hell of a card. Last year's show was too. And those are all in the running. I mean, All Out 21 had the match of the year, the tag team cage match. So it's got that going for it. But like, I would not be surprised if one of these matches wins match of the year, and there's multiple that are going to be in consideration.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, it's top to bottom. I think this is for moments. Yes, you're right, Jesse. Sting's retirement is the moment that above all, above debuts, Punk's return. Okay. Yes, that was big, obviously. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to high end matches, then, I mean, this is, I think it's way ahead of All Out 21. So you guys can let us know what you think in the chat if you are joining us live, like our friend Brandon. Yeah, WWE trolls. He's right. Definitely an A. There's no way this was anything but an A. So, yeah, just some hardcore trolling. I would say. So yeah, that's it. You guys got anything else you want to say about Sting? Do you want me to tease what we got in the works related to Sting?
Yeah, let's tease him a little bit.
All right. Well, we are going to do a draft very soon on Sting's best matches. We'd originally planned to do it before last night, and we didn't have it in the schedule. We just couldn't work it in. So we're thinking we're going to do it around the anniversary of Clash 1 here towards the end of the month. That'll be our tie-in. But yeah, Sting's greatest matches, fantasy draft. We'll try to get a good guest, you know, with us for that one. That should be a hell of a lot of fun. So we're definitely not done talking about Mr. Steve Borden this month.
I got to say, I think it's a lucky break we didn't do it before this show, because that match is getting drafted, and I think it's going to get drafted pretty high too.
Yeah, absolutely.
One.
I was thinking about that. I mean, obviously, like, he's had better physical performances, athletic performances, but like, if you're just talking about storytelling and emotion, you're going to be hard pressed to find a better one than last night.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah.
I'm looking right now, and as of right now, it is the highest graded match on Cage Match, just barely ahead of Ospreay and Takeshita, but it is the highest one from last night. So, I mean, yeah, it might go number one overall in that draft. We'll have to see. But speaking of Takeshita, let's go right to that one. Okay. Jeez. Because I think another takeaway of this show, you know, as big as we are on Swerve, and we continue to be, another takeaway I had is like, this guy Will Ospreay, how do you hold off going full throttle with this guy? You know, and this is a good problem to have. But it feels to me like with the young guys on this roster, and Ospreay in the press scrum was talking about the talent. He said it was the best roster in wrestling history. And God, we got Okada coming in now this week too, is the rumor on Wednesday night. Jesus, man, like we all want to see Swerve hold the title, and I'm sure he will, but and I think Ospreay probably is going to get that big moment at All In when they go overseas, but Jesus, they got some options now. They have some great this crowd went crazy for him. It's a hardcore audience, but man, the guy has everything. Jesse, I mean, we've all been big fans of Ospreay, you especially. He's got everything you want. He's got international appeal. He's awesome in the ring. He's good on promos, relatable on promos. He's quotable, like the shirt you just ordered. He's got a great theme song. Yeah. It's just, he has every single thing you would want. And, you know, Swerve has all those things too. So it's just like, how do you decide? It's got to be both of those guys. I feel like I want to see both of them be world champion this year. And then we still got this situation with like Bryan Danielson. You know, he's on his way out. He's never really had gold in this promotion. What a roster. But that match last night, I watched it again this afternoon, and some of the moves in that match, you know, like that backbreaker across the turnbuckle where he got injured on it. I don't think I've ever seen anything like that before. The way they laid the forearms into each other in this match looked so real. Jesse, let me throw it to you first. Your thoughts.
I couldn't keep up. It's really, really hard to keep up with a Will Ospreay match, if especially if you've been following the guy's career. I mean, I got like a page and a half full of notes, and I'm not even going to go into any of them, to be honest with you. I'll go into like a half of one because, yeah, like I said in the opening, that crowd was almost, they were a combination of on their feet and breathless at times. Like they couldn't comprehend what in the world they were just watching. You could hear even Tony Schiavone's voice crackling on occasion, just going, what in the world am I watching right now? I've never seen anything like this. Don Callis was kind of bringing things into perspective too. I actually thought he did a really good job on commentary, which really surprises me from him. I think the one thing where my eyes almost popped out of my head was when Ospreay went for a Stormbreaker, got countered into like this corkscrew pile driver where he landed on kind of on the top of his shoulder blades. Takeshita immediately picks him up into a wheelbarrow German suplex, releases it. Ospreay gets up, hits a hidden blade. Takeshita gets up at one. Crowd is losing their shit. You then have a lariat that twists Ospreay about three quarters of the way in the air. Couple seconds later, he goes for a flying knee, and then Ospreay catches him and lands a Styles Clash of all things for a two count. Crowd's just losing their mind. I mean,
yeah,
that was just 10% of what you saw in that match last night. I can't glow anymore about it, so I'm going to stop. Takeshita, like I've said for like the last year, dude is incredible. Now you got to get him away from Don Callis and figure out some sort of program for him, either there or Justin's idea, which I love a lot. Send him over to New Japan for an excursion. You're not going to miss him on AEW TV just because of what's coming in. Let him grow over there. Come back. Give him a renewed focus with a different either mouthpiece or something along those lines. And let's see if we can get him in that main event picture, because let's face it, he earned it last night. He looked fantastic. Yeah. Enough said.
Both of these guys got to get away from Callis. You said it last night. You don't mind Fletcher being with Callis, but man, they got to get Ospreay away from him too. He clearly doesn't need him. There's no reason. If anything, I think the association with Callis would drag down Ospreay, despite him being a can't miss talent. Justin, your thoughts?
Yeah, I loved the match. I don't think I'm quite as high on Ospreay as you guys. There is a little bit with when it comes to his matches. Just for me personally, and believe me, I am by no means a hater of Ospreay like you will see online, but there are occasions where it's a little bit of diminishing returns where, you know, he's so hard hitting with a lot of his stuff and he bumps so good that it just comes a point in the match where it's like, has anything that happened before meant anything? Because I just feel like we're doing the same thing over and over again here. Now, having said that, you know, talking out the side of my mouth here, I still love the match. I gasped multiple times. I do find it a little weird. And part of the reason why I would grade Danielson in Kingston higher is because it was more storyline oriented, not talking just about, you know, coming into the match, but the match itself is very, very storyline driven. And it was earned, whereas Ospreay and Takeshita, they worked a main event match. Like, that felt like it should have been the blow off to some huge feud, but it was just Ospreay's like official AEW debut. So like how hard they went just didn't fully feel earned to me. And this is all in retrospect, by the way, the more I've thought about the card in the match, because in the moment, I think I was just as sucked into it as you guys. But yeah, just an absolute embarrassment of riches for Tony Khan right now. The thing with Ospreay, man, and me and Jesse talked about this on the preview show, is when it comes to his promos and stuff, I don't have a lot of exposure, and I've been kind of stunned as to how confident he is in his delivery. And when you combine that with his in-ring work, when it comes to the AEW World Championship, he feels inevitable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember seeing those promos, I think, last summer and saying on the pod that he comes across to me like an MMA fighter, like very believable, not too scripted. That's what I like about his promos. You, Jesse?
Yeah, I would definitely agree. I'm going to add something real fast and I'll let you finish. I made this mention today on Twitter because they just mentioned, someone said something about Ospreay, and I said, you're going to have to see an AEW Dynamite Ospreay and a pay-per-view Ospreay. You can't water this guy down. You almost have to treat him like a special attraction. Or, as he even said in the scrum, you have to let him get acclimated with American television and let the fans draw into who he is as a character, because we all know what in the world he can do in the ring. So now it's about doing this in front of American audience, as opposed to, as he was saying, shouting into a microphone and just like post-match New Japan promos, as well as the backstage stuff. This is such a different presentation. So he has to rein this in. This is completely new to him. And he even said it himself. Criticize me if you need to, because this is all foreign to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's, you know, that media scrum talking about how we need to get him away from Callis as soon as possible. He really comes off as kind of a an endearing little goofball with the way he was talking in that thing. You know, contradicted the ways that he was talking about acclimating himself. And then he got into his family but then talking about how he comes off as MMA. They're talking about the Tiger Driver 91, how like, that's a dangerous move, but I'm a dangerous man. I'm not going to stop doing certain moves just because I'm here now. And that was just really good stuff on his part.
Something else I'd say about him when I was listing off the things that he has, it's everything you would want, you know, for a world champion. I think another thing that I didn't mention, especially in this day and age, is that, and I've talked about this with WWE, it's like they book for the social media moments. Mm. Will Ospreay is the exact kind of wrestler you would want for like TikTok moments. And, you know, I know our older listeners probably rolling their eyes right now, but that kind of thing is so big right now to attracting young people. Trust me, I know better than anyone. The young people today have the attention span of, you know, nothing. They have no attention span. And if you're scrolling through TikTok and you see a highlight reel of this guy, that's going to get your attention. And, you know, some old school wrestling, it just won't do that for young people. And Swerve kind of has it too, but not like Ospreay. Ospreay, everything this guy does is so eye-catching that it's the exact kind of thing you need, I think, in the 2020s to attract new eyeballs to your promotion. I feel like he has every single thing that you would want. And yeah, he's like the TikTok-friendly pro wrestler. No question about it.
Bases his character off of an Assassin's Creed game.
Yes, that too. We had that conversation with Tim last night. So yeah, great match. Check that out. And the other great match that Justin's been shouting out, Danielson and Eddie Kingston. I missed the pre-match thing that you guys were talking about because of the children in the house. And then also they did post-match stuff that's out there on social media. The match itself was fantastic. You know, of course, Bryan Danielson takes the loss. Why wouldn't he? This is Bryan Danielson these days. But I mean, Justin, what'd you love about this one?
Grab a hold and tell a story. In this case, it was Danielson working that slapping hand of Eddie Kingston, making it so that he couldn't utilize it and that Eddie would have a hard time, you know, even outside of his chest slaps, you know, even just getting him up for the power bomb at the end. Mm. That was just all really good stuff. I mean, man, my head is kind of spinning trying to go back and think about this thing. The interesting thing to me is how is Eddie going to move forward now? Because his entire AEW run is how he has just felt slighted by everybody he has worked with in the past. And he has basically just gotten all of their respects, you know, in the past 3 years, 4 years. I mean, everybody but Punk, but who needs his respect? And now, you know, Danielson gave him his honor, you know, he shook his hand. And so where does Eddie go from here now that he's like truly established himself? I think that that's going to make for some interesting character work.
Yeah. Jesse, you got anything on this one you wanted to hit?
So this is the only one that I really want to go back and rewatch. I only so far have rewatched Ospreay Takeshita, but as soon as we're done here tonight, I am rewatching this one because, like I said, that the pre-fight interview was incredible. Mm-hmm. Lexi speaking for Bryan Danielson, Renee speaking for Eddie Kingston, the music hitting, Justin mentioned that with Bret Hart's promo at In Your House Final Four. As soon as he got done, music hits, walks to the ring, boom. Just felt like a big fight. Yeah. Feel it was, and Justin pointed this out, it was a 20 minute match and it flew by. It felt like 10. They mm-hmm. did an incredible job telling a story. I think from a storytelling perspective, this is the match of the night. I'm gonna have to go back and watch it and really make my stamp upon it. But the Danielson promo as well afterwards, which I think you can find anywhere, you should go out of your way to see it, where he gave Eddie his respect and just kind of chuckled, dropped the F-bomb a handful of times and just said, this guy earned my respect. And he kind of did his, oh shucks, I'm laughing in a promo style again, but it works for Bryan Danielson. Mm-hmm. I'm very curious to see where both men go, because Danielson is supposedly on his way out from a full-time standpoint. And then Justin said it, Eddie, like what does he do? Who are his next opponents? It's going to be really eye-opening to me.
Yeah. What mountain is he going to create in his own head that he has to climb and conquer, you know, because that's been his entire wrestling story.
Yeah. Well, we're going to hit a lot of this stuff fast in the interest of time. We know a lot of podcasts have come out already covering the blow by blow of every match. So we're going to just hit some talking points we have. I think one major talking point, maybe to bring it down a notch before we go high on some stuff again, is the one match that universally, as it was going on, we all kind of had problems with. It should not have been on the show. Look, Chris Jericho aside, this scramble match had no business on this show. You already have a 10 plus match card. This is the kind of thing you can build TV around. You know, I just, this stuff where you're like just trying to get people on the show. And there's been an added emphasis on Wardlow, which made the finish very obvious. The match was too long, went over 16 minutes. And, you know, our big problem with it, especially after having just watched In Your House Final Four for Top Rope Nation Classics, which if you guys are not patrons, sign up. Great show. We did it last week, 2 hours on that in 1997 WWF. I'll be dropping a teaser here on our main feed later this week. But that match, the Final Four match, felt like such a fight because you had people fighting on the outside and in the ring. And then you contrast that with this, where it was just the epitome of scripted multi-man wrestling, where it doesn't seem real. Like, you could literally see the guys just watching on the outside, and they were coming in individually, like a line, like one move, then another guy comes in, a move, another guy comes in. I hate that kind of thing. It's not realistic. Why are these people not fighting on the outside of the ring? And real quick, I wanted to mention, because Jesse, you talked about this on Twitter, and someone I saw responded to you, and they're like, isn't that all multi-man matches? No, it's not. Watch In Your House Final Four. It's not. Yep. It doesn't have to be that way. These guys should be fighting all over the place. They should be fighting on the outside in the ring. It should be a crazy wild match. It shouldn't be two guys fighting and everyone else laying around visibly watching the match happen for minutes on end. It was not a good match. The ratings for this reflect it. It was the low point of the show. I mean, it had some eye-popping high spots, of course, yeah. But I mean, overall, it was just, it had no business on the show, Justin. Go ahead.
Right guy won. I'll give it that much. But I mean, no exaggeration. 30 seconds into this match, half the people in it were on the outside for the next 3 to 4 minutes while they did their little mini version of Meat Madness. And not only just... Yeah. How annoying that was. It was a pretty sloppy match too on everybody's part that was involved. And I don't have a whole lot to say about it. Just did not care for it.
Two more things. The four small guys then getting in the ring, and the four guys, the big guys clearing on to the outside and just sitting there chilling, was not a good look either. And Dante Martin really reminds me of Will Ospreay in 2015, 2016. Hmm. You could see a lot of that last night where he was kind of trying to connect four, five, six different high spots together, and he really started to slip up. He just needs to slow it down a little bit more. This is something that Dustin Rhodes, I know, has talked about quite a bit, where it looks like he's moving quickly, but he says he's moving a little bit slower just so he can tell that story and look a little bit more graceful, so stuff like that doesn't happen. So that's just one observation I had for that match. The rest of it was just, like you said, they were looking, they were waiting. They were almost like peeking over the apron, waiting for the spot to happen and then getting in the ring. And it just was a horrible
look. Chris Jericho
was
peeking over the apron. Chris Jericho was peeking over the apron on the right-hand side of the screen for minutes, just crouched down. You could see his eyes peek over the apron from one of the cameras, just watching and watching and watching. It was so hokey. I agree with Justin. Right guy won, clearly, but they could have cut this one and been totally fine. So I don't have much else on that. I will say, and you know, you guys talked about on the preview show last week, Orange Cassidy fatigue that some people have talked about online, and I don't really feel that either. To your point, Justin, I know you said that you don't really feel that. He has had a lot of exposure, and he's been one of the guys, especially last year, carrying the promotion week to week. So I guess I can understand if people are saying that. I don't feel it, but I do think it was the right decision to put Roddy Strong over. As for, you know, as cringeworthy as the Adam stuff was, and we talked a lot about it on the show, bell to bell, this guy is still excellent, and he came across to me last night like, you know, 7-8 years ago when he was one of the top workers in the industry. And so you like to see that. I had no problem with him winning the international title, which has become kind of that workhorse title. So I thought this was a really good one too. I mean, not in the top three, but a very, very strong match. If this happened on weekly television, people have been raving about it. Must see match.
Justin. Yeah, sub 13 minute match. It felt like it was longer in a good way, not like it dragged, mm-hmm. but just in fact, like it felt epic in a kind of a smaller way. Hopefully this does something for Undisputed Kingdom. They're in desperate need of some sort of injection of interest. So hopefully Roddy Strong can keep that going. But these two are a match made in heaven with the way that Orange sells, and Roddy is just relentless with going after somebody's back. And, you know, Orange coming in with all the tape on his ribs and back just added to the entire aura of the match.
Hmm.
Justin. Yeah, very, very physical Roddy Strong, something we haven't seen. We saw quite a bit of it in NXT as well, but I mean, if you watched his Ring of Honor stuff, you're like, yep, this is the Roddy Strong I remember. I'm psyched. Again, maybe he becomes the workhorse guy and defends it either every week or every other week. We would love to see that. I think this is going to be the start of something for the Undisputed Kingdom, only because there's a certain someone that's going to be making his appearance here in the next month or two to kind of uplift this faction, in my humble opinion. It's great that they're able to take a step back because of all the things that have taken the forefront. We just talked about it. Sting, Will Ospreay, Brian Danielson, Eddie Kingston. I mean, there's so much. And we didn't even talked about the triple threat yet, which I'm sure we're going to get into. So there you go.
Yeah. Yeah. So Kyle O'Reilly making his return, conflicted. He's not going to be a member of Undisputed, or from what we're hearing, at least he's not going to be part of this, but we'll see. But it was nice to see him back. That was a nice surprise. Crowd pop.
It doesn't look like he slept since he was injured.
That is true. It's very true. We were commenting on that watching, but yeah, strong match. Now some people were kind of down on the women's match. I think the rating on this is way too low on Cage Match. Now, yeah, it wasn't up to like some of these other bouts we're talking about. I thought the presentation of it was very good. The Mariah May thing, when she came out, like the old Toni Storm tricked you at first. I mean, I've seen some of the side-by-side pictures. It's crazy how much they look alike. That was a nice touch. The match was fine. I didn't think it was bad or anything. But at the same time, there was no way. You just could not take the title off Toni Storm with the boss coming in here in a week and a half. You can't do that. So, you know, unfortunately for Deonna Purrazzo, the timing wasn't right for her. But I think she will be established as one of the mainstays near the top of the women's division. She's very talented. And I thought the match was fine. I didn't have any digs at it or anything. Justin, you?
Yeah, actually, you kind of said everything I would have said. It just felt like we're kind of just going through the motions until we can get to Mercedes right now.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoyed the chain wrestling in the first 5 minutes between the two. I was paying attention probably more than anybody in the arena was, I think, just because they had just seen BCC and FTR go at it, which I'm sure we're just going to touch on in a minute. No, I thought this was a very good women's match. And yeah, poor anybody who debuts and gets thrown into a world title match. They're like 0 for the century. That's probably going to change soon, but yeah. Hey, I mean, no, Toni should hold the title. I think it's going to be a really, really fun program once Mercedes arrives.
Yeah. Let's talk about the tag. Blackpool Combat Club and NFTR. Another very strong match. They won almost 22 minutes. Blackpool Combat Club gets the victory. Justin, thoughts on this one?
I hate to keep going back to time, you know, for these matches, but it's the same thing where it's like kind of the inverse of Orange and Roddy Strong, where I was kind of surprised at how long this match was because it felt like it went so much quicker. I mean, you just have four of the absolute best at what they do in the ring at the same time. They had a match prior that they could build off of, in, you know, Dax just can't help himself, but I loved it regardless with his little homage to Bret Hart, which I believe you guys watched at Flying Elbow, the WrestleMania 13 match. So quite the coincidence.
We did. Yes, Jesse. That was a fun time. Was it not?
I love that we were the only people watching the match, and we were telling the employees they should get a mandatory break.
Yeah. You guys get off the clock to watch this masterpiece on your TVs right now. Multiple TVs in this little bar, but yeah.
No, Justin hit it.
Yeah, it flew by. It flew by. And to Justin's point, sorry to interrupt you, but I know you talked about on the preview show that, you know, you're a little worried about, you know, how many of these matches looked on paper like they would go a long time, and the card was getting really long. But to your point, it flew by. So, I mean, I understand that trepidation going in for sure, but man, yeah, this one over 20 minutes did not feel like it.
Four consummate professionals. Claudio looked damn good. I was loving a lot of his offense, the European uppercuts per usual. The selling from FTR, which has been their staple for the last 10 years. Yeah. And now with this edition of the AEW Tag Team Tournament, which, I mean, I stole the idea from March Madness, so I'm going to say Tony Khan stole the idea from me. It's going to be definitely a very fun tournament to watch. And what do they do with the trios? Because that's relegated to the pre-show. You got to get rid of it.
Bricks.
Maybe unify it and send it over to Ring of Honor. I think that might be the way to go.
They got to get rid. It's just diluting the tag. We've said this for 100%. A long time on the show. Just dilutes the tag division. You don't need it. Now Christian and Daniel Garcia, we almost had it because we were talking before the show, what's going to open. And I think we all kind of, Ryan might open. Well, that was the second match. Christian and Garcia opened and they got about 17 minutes. Had a pretty good match. Again, not on the level of some of these other ones. Justin, you're a big Christian mark on this show.
Yeah, love Christian with all my heart and soul, to rip off somebody else's gimmick. I mean, this is just one of those matches which was solid and was just hurt because of, outside of our love of Christian, a kind of a boring and paint-by-numbers outcome. You know, I thought that since it was opening, maybe we would get a Adam Copeland appearance to help Daniel Garcia win. That didn't happen. And so the match just kind of got lost in the shuffle of everything that came after it, which, you know, no fault of its own. It just, you know, I don't know.
No Adam Copeland on this show, which, you know, on a show where they seemed like they were trying to get everyone on there with that stupid scramble match. He lives in North Carolina. He actually lives in North Carolina, and no appearance. No appearance for Mr. Copeland. So, yeah, Jesse, you have any thoughts on this one?
He did manage to sneak into the Sting movie theater presentation. I mean, that's
true.
Sighting of Adam Copeland that we saw. Yeah, I got to go back and listen to the preview show now, because I think I said Christian Cage and Daniel Garcia was going to open.
Oh, did you? Nice.
I believe I did. I'm going to go back to it, send it to you to confirm. This completely got lost in the shuffle. It was just unfortunate circumstances. I wanted Daniel Garcia to win this championship just to see maybe, if not necessarily put the TNT title on an equal playing field as the international, but kind of let Daniel Garcia do what Roddy Strong's about to do and just go wrestle people, look great doing it, and put on good performances, because that's what the AEW is right now, is the alternative to the other promotion. They're the ones that are putting on the quality wrestling from an in-ring product standpoint and doing something different than what the other side's not.
It does kind of feel, though, like the TNT championship has kind of become the, you know, superstar championship, not really the work rate championship. So, you know, hindsight, you know, being 2020, it does kind of make sense that Garcia would lose this one, because it just feels like we're heading towards an eventual Adam Copeland win for this title.
Yeah.
Or, God willing, Danielson, even though, you know, they already fought back in the fall.
Yeah, Copeland can become my two-time TNT champion. He already had his little reign, didn't he?
Yeah.
I believe you, Jesse, that you you predicted this would be number one. You don't have to timestamp me. No. You're a smart guy.
Sounds fishy.
I got, I'll still go back and listen anyway.
We were talking, was that, it might have been on the car down the Flying Elbow with Jay and Tim. I can't remember, but we were definitely had a conversation about this. And I know I said Kingston and Brian maybe would be it, but yeah, I was close. But I think this is fine for the opener. Now, man, that world title match to follow Ospreay and Takeshita. Now, we thought for sure the women would come in the final three. And Jesse, you remarked when we were watching, oh my, those big three matches are going to come right in a row. And the world title match was excellent. But that being said, kind of got lost, I'd say, coming after Ospreay and before Sting. Like, I just haven't thought that much about it in the aftermath. I think going in, you guys talked about it. I've talked about it with you. It's just, you couldn't take the belt off Joe right now, as big as we are on Swerve. And, you know, they had a couple of moments where maybe they got you to bite that he was going to win it. But I think the bigger story, yeah, was like what was going on with Hangman and Swerve. And I liked the bit in the match where, like, Hangman had the match won, but he screwed himself because he attacked the referee. That was nice. And it looks like Paige is going to be out for a while from what we're hearing. And so we're expecting, like, maybe on Dynamite, perhaps there's going to be something happening with that. Maybe for attacking the officials, he gets suspended or something. I don't know. Fightful had this report that he was going to be taking some time off, it sounds like. So all of that, very logical. The match was good. It's just that on a stacked show, I just honestly haven't thought that much about it. Let me go to Jesse first. Anything you want to say on this one?
They all had their moments. Swerve stood out to me, although I will say Hangman's character work, beating up two referees and just looking incensed anytime he looked at Swerve and just angry, just vindictive. I thought that was a really sweet touch. So Joe got to be able to play off of that, choke out Hangman and win the match. Justin, again, I mean, I keep going back to you because you've been hitting the nail on the head, I think, for the last 45 minutes in some change. Swerve should not win a title in a triple threat match. I saw some discourse online today saying, why in the world didn't Swerve win? And I said, it's easy. Why would you do it in a three-way?
And not in the main event.
Yeah.
A show that was more about Sting. Yeah.
And I think this... All right. Well, first off, problem with the match is I think the first third of it was a little disjointed. There was a lot of near falls where Joe was supposed to interrupt the count, which he was late to. I don't like blame anybody.
He was a little off.
Yeah.
It seemed like he was a little off early. Yeah.
Yeah. But you know, once you got past that first third, and I would just say that the entire second half of the match was incredible. I thought Hangman to me was probably the highlight of it. But to me, this match is just a bridge for where they're going. This was about laying more groundwork for the story they're trying to tell. You know, there was a moment in the match where Swerve hit both of his finishers on Joe and didn't even like attempt a pinfall. He just went right back to Hangman, you know? So I think that is going to come back around and have a pretty important impact later on. Whereas he's kind of learning to be cutthroat and maybe ignore his own personal feelings, which you need to do if you want to be champ, if you want to wear the gold, you know. Hangman, obviously, a fucking madman, and Joe, just the best in the world, you know, just doing what he had to do to get the job done. So not a perfect match. Borderline something that could get lost on a card like this, but it was a match built for the future.
Two quick things. I like that Swerve turned down Prince Nana's crown, or he had it and said, nope, yeah, I'm not winning this way. Yeah. And the other thing is you sandwich that match in between the two matches that everybody's talking about. So obviously it's not going to be thought of at all.
And thank you. Terrible night for Swerve to win the title.
Yeah. And thank you, Jesse, for driving home. The other point that I totally missed was that this was to firmly establish, I think, Swerve as the babyface, Hangman as the heel.
Yeah. So that's it. That was Revolution. We've got Okada possibly debuting Wednesday night. Next Wednesday, we got Mercedes coming in. We got a new pay-per-view next month in St. Louis here in the Midwest coming up. Justin's not a fan of that one.
Come back to Minnesota. Right, Ryan, tell them why that stinks. Weren't they just at this exact same place not too long ago, drawing a roaring 3,000 people?
They have not drawn well down there. And I think it's more just Tony playing nice, because at one point, wasn't that supposed to be the location of Full Gear that was 21? In Minneapolis?
Yeah,
and then they changed it, and he had promised that they would get a pay-per-view. So it's just him making good on his promise. But like, they were just there a couple of months ago. I think Collision. And yeah, it did. I think it was it January? I need to pull up WrestleTicket.
That's what you said.
That sounds right.
Yeah, they were just there, and it was only a few thousand people, and they did a little bit better the time they were there before. I'm sure they'll get the travel in audience and stuff. They got a big airport there and maybe some cheap flights. But yeah, we were selfishly hoping on the Twin Cities. That was just such a great time at Full Gear a few years back. And I think this is just a make good. And, you know, he said as such, Tony said as such, for the switch that they pulled. Now they're running at the University of St. Louis, which is close to downtown, near Union Station, I believe, even, but it's not where the Blues play, which is a much bigger building. So they'll probably fill it up, I think, since it's a pay-per-view, but there's certainly hotter markets for AEW. I will say that I'm contemplating going. It's not my favorite drive, but it's also doable. Now it is a Sunday, so I have to take some time off work, but again, I get some personal days to burn. What's that?
I said again.
Yeah. But yeah, we'll see. We'll see. What else? So yeah, we got more content coming for Sting later in the month. We're of course going to be building up to WrestleMania, and God, we got so much dropping on Patreon, you guys. I mentioned it, the In Your House Final Four. If you guys are not patrons, I say this all the time, you're missing most of our content. Jesse drops TRN Unplugged almost every single week. We got TRN Extra. There's more than 140 bonus podcasts. You guys, you need to join the Patreon page. It's the best way to ensure the show continues into the future. And we reach 400 episodes. This is 333 tonight. Become a patron. Link is here in the description. Get all that bonus content. Jesse, go ahead.
I promised something, so I'm going to do it.
Yes.
The tease of an announcement. So I scrapped my ECW 1995 review of the year. I'm going to do that next year. I have decided to work on an ebook that's going to be released next spring. That's all I can tell you right now. This is as the advice of my two co-hosts, and I could not agree more. So once I think the late fall hits, I will tell you all about what this ebook consists of. And all I'm going to say is you all should be very excited, because I sure as hell am.
I am looking forward to it. Yeah, you told us what you're working on. I think it's going to be really fun. And you're right, I think you should play it close to the vest so nobody steals your idea, for sure. But it's going to be worthwhile. And of course, when we get into the fall and you got this thing of getting close to completion, we'll promote the hell of it out of it on the show and all of our social channels. So stay tuned for that.
And I think there's a chance we're going to be renaming the Patreon Bukkake, because there's just so much and it's dropping everywhere.
Well, that's better than what you said on the Revolution post show a couple of years ago. I'll tell people to check the archives in the first 5 minutes on our, what was that, Revolution 21. Yes. Listen to that one back not too long ago.
I am who I am.
It's one of Top Pro Nation's finest moments.
That Just go first... back and listen to the first 5 minutes of our Revolution 21 review, and you'll know what we're talking about. You know, after the exploding deathmatch debacle, Justin was at his best there in the intro. Good stuff. Don't change, Justin. Never change. Please don't. this is our flagship for this week. So, on the main feed, if you're not a patron, you're going to get that... you're going to get that preview of TRN Classics and get like 15 minutes of it later this week. But we'll be back next week. Justin just signed off for a second. Now he's back. What happened?
You guys froze.
We froze?
Yeah, you guys froze. I thought you booted me because I made a bukkake joke.
Oh, it showed on mine that you exited. I don't know what's going on. We better sign off before Restream just gets totally nuts.
Houdini down there, yeah.
Guys, subscribe on all the major podcasting platforms as well. Word of mouth is huge. We really, really appreciate all of you that have helped this podcast grow. Join the Facebook group. But really, word of mouth is the best way. You know, it works way better than taking out ads or anything like that. All of you listening have friends that like pro wrestling. Tell them to check out our podcast. We'd appreciate that. Tell them to subscribe to the YouTube channel or on Apple or Spotify, wherever they get those podcasts. And if you like what you hear, you can get more content over on Patreon. So that's all I got. Unless you guys have anything else, I think we're going to hit the road. It has been episode 333 of Top Rope Nation. Have a great week. We'll talk to you guys again very soon. Take care.
That was...